Hello and welcome to this episode of By His Word. I am your host and teacher, Candy Carmichael. We have been discussing various Bible characters and their lives to see what we can learn from their experiences with God. One of the most well-known personalities in the Old Testament is Moses, the one who led the children of Israel out of Egypt after they spent 400 years in bondage there. Most people have the concept of Moses as portrayed in the classic Hollywood film, The Ten Commandments. To say that the producers of the movie took liberties with the biblical narrative of the life of Moses and the culture of that time is an understatement. Yet, it did give people some understanding of the historical truth of the nation of Israel and her move back to the land that God had promised them. The story actually begins with the patriarch Abraham, who was the father of the nation of Israel. From him came the son born supernaturally in their old age to Abraham and Sarah, who gave birth to Isaac. Then Isaac and his wife had Jacob, who in turn was the father of 12 sons, whose descendants became the 12 tribes of Israel. Abraham had been promised by God that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars of the sky and as the sand of the sea. But then Abraham was told to make a sacrifice to the Lord of some animals and birds. When Abraham did so, God spoke to him and prophesied this: "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that will not be theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nation whom they will serve I will judge. Afterward they will come out with great possessions." Genesis 15:13-14. It was many years later that Joseph, one of the sons of Jacob, was betrayed by his jealous brothers and sold into slavery in Egypt. But God preserved Joseph and eventually promoted him to the second position in the land under Pharaoh. A great famine hit the entire region, and Joseph's family eventually moved from Canaan to Egypt to be spared from the famine. The children of Israel lived in the land of Egypt and multiplied exceedingly. Eventually, the Egyptians grew alarmed over the minority group within their borders, and they made them slaves. Several hundred years passed, and the people began to cry out to God for deliverance. This is where the plan of God for his people began to unfold. When the patriarch Jacob prophesied over each of his sons just prior to his death, he stated that from the tribe of Judah would come the bloodline of the Messiah, Genesis 49:8-10. The one who would be chosen to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt was Moses. He and his brother Aaron were descendants of the tribe of Levi, which became known as the bloodline of the priesthood. Aaron would become later the first high priest of Israel after they left Egypt. The Bible states that the children of Israel had grown to a large population within Egypt. The Egyptians became alarmed and forced the children of Israel, also known as the Hebrews, to serve them by building cities for Pharaoh. The labor was long and hard, and the Hebrews began to cry out to God for deliverance. And the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the one was named Sifra, and the name of the other was Puah. And he said, "When you go do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birthing stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." But the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they saved the male children. So the king of Egypt called for them and said to the midwives, "Why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them." Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people grew very mightily. And so it was because the midwives feared God that he provided households for them. So Pharaoh commanded all of his people, saying, "Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive." Exodus 1:15-22. Now obviously, God does not approve of lying, but in this case, he overlooked the lie of the Hebrew women because they were preserving the lives of the male children. When Pharaoh commanded all of his people to watch for the births of male Hebrew children and to throw them into the river, he could not know that one day one of his descendants would die by this same method. Even though the children of Israel had no formal leadership or means of gathering for spiritual worship and encouragement, their knowledge of and fear of the Lord was passed down through individual families. They knew enough of their spiritual heritage to call upon God, and the midwives had a respect for human life and a fear of God that made them preserve the male babies, even at risk to their own lives and positions as midwives. It was during this time of threats against the male children that a young couple gave birth to a son. The parents were named Amram and Jochebed, according to Exodus 6:20. The boy had an older sister who was named Miriam, Exodus 15:20. When the baby was born, he was a beautiful child, and the mother hid him for 3 months. But a baby cannot be concealed forever, and Jochebed had to do something to protect him from certain death if he was discovered. But when she could no longer hide him, she made an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with pitch, which is similar to asphalt, and put the child in it and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood far off to see what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside, and when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take the child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." Exodus 2, 2-10. It is always amazing how God's timing of events works out perfectly. The child was hidden in a basket by the riverside at precisely the time that Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe. God touched her heart with compassion for the child, even though he was obviously not an Egyptian baby. The daughter knew of her father's edict to kill all the Hebrew males, but she also knew her position as his daughter and that he would not deny her wish to have a son. We don't know if she remained unmarried or what she said to her father to allow her to raise the child, but God controlled the situation to the point where Moses was preserved in the house of Pharaoh, and it was at the devil's expense. How hard it must have been for the parents of Moses to watch their tiny son grow and eventually be weaned from nursing. They would have to surrender him to the daughter of Pharaoh to be raised as an Egyptian. Would they ever see him again? Would he forget his heritage as a Hebrew, or forget the family that he never really got to know? Yet God had a plan for Moses, and he gave Amram and Jochebed another son in the place of Moses. Aaron, too, would be instrumental in the future of Israel as a nation. A child was generally weaned in Hebrew culture between the ages of 2 and 3 years. By that time, Moses would have been walking, talking, and have some social skills. He would quickly forget Hebrew as his native language, although many of the people were obviously bilingual through their centuries of living in Egypt. Time passed, and Moses grew to adulthood. Obviously, he was aware that he was not an Egyptian. He may have even been told the full story of his adoption by his Egyptian mother. His adoptive grandfather, the Pharaoh of Egypt, had accepted Moses as a part of the family in spite of his birth. Yet Moses was very aware of the presence of his Hebrew brethren and their circumstances of slavery in the land. Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting, and he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" Then he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you kill the Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Exodus 2:11-15. We don't know exactly how far in the area of the region of Midian and how far it was from Pharaoh's palace, but it was far enough away for Moses to feel safe. Midian was likely the region in what is now part of northwest Saudi Arabia. Most people would have preferred to live near predictable water supplies, so it may have been close to the current location of what is now the Gulf of Aqaba. The priest of the area had seven daughters who came to the well to draw water for their flocks. Moses assisted them, and the priest invited Moses to live with their family. Eventually, Moses married one of their daughters, whose name was Zipporah. She bore him a son named Gershom, whose name means, "I have been a stranger in a foreign land," Exodus 2:16-22. Now Moses had gone from living as the grandson of the Egyptian Pharaoh to being a shepherd on the backside of a desert. Meanwhile, his brethren in Egypt were crying out to God for deliverance, and the life of Moses was about to change drastically. One day, while Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, he noticed a bush that was on fire, but it was not consumed. He went over to it for a closer look. Then God called to Moses, and Moses answered, saying, "Here I am." God told Moses to remove his sandals because he was standing on holy ground. He then told Moses that he had seen the oppression of his people who were in Egypt, but that he had plans to deliver them and to bring them to the land that he had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But then God shocked Moses with these words, "Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Exodus 3:1-10. Moses had figured he would probably spend the rest of his life as a shepherd, and he was not expecting this frightening assignment from God. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" So God said, "I will certainly be with you, and this will be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Then Moses said to God, "Indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and I say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they say to me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" Exodus 3:11-14. Then God explained that his name was a name forever and a memorial to all generations. He told Moses to gather all of the elders of Israel together and tell them that he had seen their sufferings and was about to bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey. He told Moses that they would heed the voice of Moses and that they would ask the king of Egypt to let them go 3 days into the wilderness to offer a sacrifice to God. God told Moses that he knew Pharaoh would not allow this and that he, God, would strike Egypt with signs and wonders until Pharaoh eventually released them. God would give the Israelites such favor with the Egyptians that the Egyptians would send them away with great riches and thus plunder the wealth of the Egyptians as repayment for their suffering. Exodus 3:16-22. Moses continued to give his list of what-ifs to the Lord. Then Moses answered and said, "But suppose that they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose that they say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.'" So the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" Moses said, "A rod." And God said, "Cast it to the ground." So he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." And he reached out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Exodus 4:1-5. The Lord went on to give Moses the ability to perform two other signs that would verify the Lord's calling upon him, but Moses was still reluctant to do what the Lord was asking. Then Moses said to the Lord, "O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." So the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth, or who has made the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say." But Moses said, "O my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send." So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, "Is not Aaron the Lord, the Levite, your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now, Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will tell you the things that you shall do. And he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. And you shall take this rod in your hand with which you shall do the signs. Exodus 4:10-17. Now we're going to take a brief break, and you can find out how you can be witnesses to people in 177 different countries around the world. We will be right back.
We hope you are enjoying today's show. We believe that God has given us a voice to impact communities and regions all over the world. If you would like to make sure that voice is heard, please partner with us today by visiting www.expressionradio.org and click donate. You can also text give by texting the dollar amount followed by the word radio to the number 84321. First-time text givers, please choose Expression Church of Huntington when prompted. All gifts are tax deductible. Join us as we change the world.
Okay, welcome back here. There is a lot to unpack. First of all, we don't know the relationship that Moses had with God before his encounter with the burning bush. Having lived in the pagan culture of Egypt since early childhood, he could not have had the usual upbringing that an Israelite child would have had. When Moses met his future father-in-law, the man was first called Reuel, which means friend of God. He was described as the priest of Midian. Since any name ending with the suffix El referred to God, then this means that Reuel was a priest of God rather than a pagan deity. Very likely, he is the one who introduced or reintroduced Moses to his Hebrew roots and the God of Israel. Reuel is later referred to as Jethro, and several people in the scriptures either had name changes or a second name. Moses must have felt that at his advanced age of 80, he was too old to be leading the children of Israel. According to Stephen's sermon in Acts chapter 7, Moses was 40 years old when he killed the Egyptian and fled to Egypt. He then lived in Midian for 40 years before God called him to be the deliverer for his people. Never feel that you are too old or that your life is over until God says that you are done. He gets the glory when he shows the world that he can use even those whose strength and abilities are diminished to be mighty in God and still do exploits even at their age. Moses continued to make excuses for why he could not do what God was asking until the patience of God ran out. Finally, the Lord gave Moses a helper, his brother Aaron, to be a spokesman for him. We do not know if Aaron was reunited with his brother at this time, or if God had brought them back together before the burning bush experience. We don't know the exact location in Midian where Moses lived, or if he had made any contact with his brother and sister prior to this time. So now Moses had no excuse left to disobey the commandment of God. He and Aaron were to be a team to convince the children of Israel that they were about to be freed from bondage and that God had heard their cries for deliverance. They also had to go before Pharaoh to convince him to let his large contingent of slave labor leave the country because their God had told them to do so. This would not be an easy task. Before any of this could be done, Moses had to tell his family of God's command and that they were going back to Egypt. Jethro gave his blessing immediately. So Moses took his wife and his two sons, and they set out for Egypt. Along the way, the Lord compelled Moses to circumcise his son before he could go into Egypt. He met Aaron in the wilderness, and together they traveled back to Egypt. Exodus 4:18-28. Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all of the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. Then he did the signs in the sight of the people. So the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, and that they had looked, and that he had looked on their afflictions, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. Exodus 4:29-31. Even in the midst of hopelessness, the children of Israel got a faint glimmer of hope that at last their cry had been heard. It would take a bit more time and demonstration of the Lord's power before they finally had the courage to leave their life of bondage and move toward the promised land. Their first meeting with Pharaoh was less than cordial, to put it mildly. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord, that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." So they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please, let us go into the desert and sacrifice unto the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence and with the sword." Then the king of Egypt said to them, "Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor." And Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor." So the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "You shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words." Exodus 5:1-9. Pharaoh, of course, had never had an encounter with the God of Israel. In a culture where many of the gods were worshipped, Pharaoh was unaware that there was only one God who was the creator of the universe, and the children of Israel were his people. Pharaoh was soon to discover that this God was far more powerful than all of the gods of Egypt put together. He dismissed the request of Aaron and Moses to let the Hebrews have even a 3-day break from their labors. Instead, he increased the labor so that the Hebrews would turn on Moses and Aaron for making request of Pharaoh. How like Satan to make the situation worse before God turns it around. Even the leaders of the children of Israel lashed out at Moses and Aaron because of the increased workload that was now placed on the people. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it that you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all." Exodus 5:22-23. Moses had expected the Lord to make a quick deliverance of the people, but the Lord had a greater plan in mind that would take some time. Likewise, we want our answers to become instant and not have to wait for God to work out all of the details over time. The Lord reassured Moses with these words, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of the land. I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage in which they were strangers. And I have also heard the groanings of the children of Israel whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the bondage of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and great judgments. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord, your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you out into the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord." So Moses spoke these words to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of their anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. Exodus 6:1-9. Sometimes even the greatest words of encouragement fall on deaf ears when the heart is full of despair and no deliverance is in sight. The collective depression of the people was obvious to the Lord and to Moses. The Lord had compassion and patience with the people because he was well aware of their fragile spirits and of the fact that they were, as the psalmist put it, just dust. Psalm 103:14. The Lord spoke to Moses and told them that he would harden Pharaoh's heart in order to bring judgments on the land of Egypt and to multiply his judgments and his signs and wonders. Aaron and Moses went in to Pharaoh again and cast down their rods, which became serpents. But Pharaoh's magicians also threw down their rods, and they became serpents. But Aaron's rods swallowed the rods of the magicians, and the king of Egypt hardened his heart and would not release the Hebrews from the land. Exodus 7:1-13. It was time for stronger measures. The Lord commanded Aaron and Moses to tell Pharaoh that because he refused to let the Hebrews go, that the waters of the river would be turned to blood. This would be the first of 10 plagues to strike Egypt as judgments. Each of the plagues was designed to show that the individual gods that were worshipped by the Egyptians were powerless against a god of Israel. For example, the god of the Nile River was Hapi, and this river supplied the drinking water for the Egyptians as well as watered their crops and livestock. But this pagan deity was unable to prevent the river from turning to blood and all of the fish in it to die. Even the rivers and lakes and the water collected in buckets in homes turned to blood so that the Egyptians had no water to drink. But Pharaoh continued to refuse to release the Hebrew people. Exodus 7:19-25. The second plague to come upon the Egyptians was that of the abundance of frogs. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your rod over the streams and rivers and ponds, and cause frogs to come up on the land of Egypt." So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs on the land of Egypt. Exodus 8:5-7. As if it wasn't bad enough when Aaron brought up the frogs, now the magicians of Egypt decided to add to the misery by also producing frogs. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and asked them to entreat the Lord to remove the frogs and he would let the people go. But when the frogs were restrained to the river only and there was relief, then Pharaoh changed his mind and he refused to let the people go. Exodus 8:8-15. Now Heket was the Egyptian god of fertility, and this god was represented by a frog. But God made a mockery of this pagan deity by killing many of them and by controlling the movement of the frogs in the waters during this plague. Again, the God of Israel proved himself to be superior to the gods of Egypt. The third plague was that of lice. So the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land so that it may come lice throughout all of the land of Egypt." And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. All of the dust of the land became lice throughout all of the land of Egypt. Exodus 8:16-17. The magicians were unable to reproduce this miracle. Again, the heart of Pharaoh grew hard, and he refused to let the children of Israel leave. This plague showed the lack of power of Geb, the Egyptian god of the dust of the earth. How frustrating it must have been for the magicians to call upon this god, and he was unable to duplicate, let alone overcome, the power of the God of Israel. There had now been three plagues in rapid succession, each one bringing misery to both man and beast in Egypt. But Pharaoh was not yet convinced that the God of Israel was more powerful than the gods that he had worshipped all of his life. He continued to refuse to release the children of Israel from the land, and there were yet seven more plagues to come, each one getting worse. We will continue with our discussion of the life of Moses next week. Until then, stay close to Jesus and keep looking up.
We hope you are enjoying today's show. We believe that God has given us a voice to impact communities and regions all over the world. If you would like to make sure that voice is heard, please partner with us today by visiting www.expressionradio.org and click donate. You can also text give by texting the dollar amount followed by the word radio to the number 84321. First-time text givers, please choose Expression Church of Huntington when prompted. All gifts are tax deductible. Join us as we change the world.